Okay, so our agenda is here. On the agenda today, we've got three items. Victoriana is going to do a quick overview of the Groningen Declaration. We need to have a discussion about the digital signatures for credentials, trying to align what Badge Alliance is using with what the credentials community group is using. In general, discussing whether or not there are any big gotchas on trying to align that work. We do have to talk about the endorsement stuff as well, trying to align the language between Badge Alliance and the credential CG. And then the last thing we might want to do is talk about the Workstreams email that I sent out to the mailing list a bit ago, trying to organize the work and pick which things we're going to tackle over the next couple of months. Are there any updates or changes to the agenda? Okay, if not, we'll go ahead and get started with the Victoriano. Would you mind doing the Groningen Declaration thing first up on the agenda? Would that work for you?
Okay, no problem. I sent Manu. Maybe you have seen an email I sent you, or maybe
yes.
Not.
Yes, I saw.
Okay.
You had a slide deck in there, I think, somewhere.
Yeah, I have a slide deck there, just in case. I'll type the URL in case anyone wants to have it. It's a bit basic, but I think that it sort of summarizes the ideas that are behind what we are trying to achieve. Okay. So all our efforts start trying to fight the diploma mills. Diploma mills are those fake diploma producing entities that you can buy a university diploma for a few bucks, and then you can become PhD or whatever you feel like being. And trying to fight that and fake diplomas and ease the access to diplomas, then following a great idea from Thomas Black from Stanford that says that all your documents are born digital, what we tried to do is to get rid of paper. So if you have digital diploma deposits, then you can have fraud prevention, reduce the friction, and then actually recover from losses. If you lose your paper diploma, you are in problem. You have a trouble. But if you have a digital version of your diploma that you can access anytime, it's quite easy to recover your university credentials and show them to anyone. And as I was brought into this activity from my digital identity backgrounds, then I said, well, what has identity to do with all this? And then it's clear that if we mix digital identity and digital diplomas and digital credentials in the university sense, then you have clear control of data ownership, privacy rights, identification, access to the data, and then you can compare the data, you can make the data compatible so you can produce credentials from one university and be consumed in another one, and of course increase the acceptation of those credentials and the recognition that we are also working on that. We are working on a way of ease the recognition of university diplomas, because maybe you know or maybe you don't know about it. One of the biggest problems is that if you go with your paper-based university diploma to a different country, then you have to go and find an authority that will say that your credentials are good and valid and they are not fake. And that's a big work to do, because most of the people that do that. That credential verification on paper-based diplomas need to be trained by police and banks, like controlling the banknotes that are moving around. Then, well, there are a couple of slides in my presentations that I'm trying to show that it's better to have the information in electronic form, because it's a free form. It's easy to transport, easy to store, easy to process, easy to retrieve, easy to create, and of course it's easy for the environment, because we are not producing heaps and heaps of paper, so killing trees. But the biggest tree killer nowadays is the nice printer. But once you print something, your information becomes jailed, and we want information to be free, okay? I will skip over these ones. And then for all these, we are basing all our work on standards and trust. There's the usual acronyms soup that come up in all these works nowadays. So from TCP/IP to something very new like MLO, ELM, and ELMO. MLO is the mobile metadata for learning opportunities. And ELM was the previous European learner mobility. And now the ELMO is a combination of the metadata for learning opportunities combined with the mobility in the European common space for higher education. And both of them have created ELMO. If you look at the, you are looking at the slide deck, probably you will see things that we have been discussing, like OpenID or JSON or the PDF signed or not signed, and things like that. We're pretty fortunate in Europe that we have an activity that is called STORC, that is aimed to have a transborder digital identity for European citizens. And having STORC as a common way of expressing identity and connecting that to university diplomas will allow us to verify identity of people and then connect them to their electronic data. Also, we have been working for several years in the higher education space, and now we have in production a big identity federation that is called EduGain. And through EduGain, we are connecting identities produced from many universities around Europe. And of course, then comes the Groningen Declaration that is trying to connect all these pieces and use them to have an easy way to share electronically the university diplomas. Based on that, well, we are talking about trust. That can be behavioral trust between person to person, institution to institution, and it's based on reputation that we build by establishing connections. And then we are trying to also establish the technical trust, and here comes all the work of people like the credentials group that produce trustworthy electronic materials like the badges that I'm quite interested in. And well, I put here the three laws of crypto that are very important to the transfer of electronic credentials, that are the confidentiality, the integrity, and the non-repudiation. These three things are very important for a diploma, and we are working on ways to establish that between institutions. And if you want to follow my deck, then I have a depiction of what could happen if we achieve our aim, that is a student that wants to leave his home institution, and then she arrives to a receiving institution, and all that can be mediated through a national digital deposit of university diplomas. And if we connect the university diplomas over a trust fabric that has to be supported both by behavioral trust and technical trust, And the behavioral part is what we are trying to achieve through the Groningen Declaration. So we are organizing meeting between the signatories of the declaration, and we are trying to establish a best practices code of conduct and all those things. So if you sign the declaration and you are here to the declaration principles, you are being bound to a certain set of principles that will allow the transfer of your electronic diplomas between institutions, creating a network of trustworthy institution and a network of trust. So it's easy for the students to move from the home institution to the receiving institution using all this trust fabric that we have built. Actually, well, this is mostly what we want to achieve. I shouldn't say simple, but I hope I have brought you enough information about us. Any questions?
What is the triggering event by which a student starts to acquire some of these credentials? Is it starting their education, or is it completing it?
Well, it can be actually at several points, because nowadays you can move from one university to the other. You can start studying in one university, move to a different university in Europe to earn some credits towards your finishing your accreditation, and then go back to the starting home institution, or even not even coming back, finishing in a different one, and that would trigger the exchange of some sort of credentials.
So basically, that was my question is, multiple parties could be making assertions about the work that you'd done, or is it the terminal one that then says
we lost Victoriano. His connection dropped, so we'll wait a second for him to jump back in. I'm sure he'll dial back here in a second.
I'm just okay. While we're waiting, does that model of credentials swimming across multiple participating partners show up in these cases as it is?
Yes. In general, I believe the answer is yes, and that's what the whole system we're building is intended to do. So what Victoriano is, multiple providers. Hold on one second. I'm describing what you said.
Sure.
Sorry, the call dropped. I don't know why. Manu, someone was asking about that
right.
the in the use case.
Right.
Actually, I would try to help and add this kind of use case, the Groningen Declaration related use case. I'll try to do that between now. Well, actually, I have two busy weeks before being on vacation. So if you allow me, that will happen before the end of January. That will be okay with the group?
Yes, yeah, certainly. So just some real high-level thoughts on what you're presenting. This is absolutely in line with what we're doing here. So, when it comes to at least the technical work that's being done, the technical work that we're doing is meant to enable exactly what you're talking about. So I would argue that we probably already have what you want in the use cases right now. But certainly, please, take a look through the use cases. If you see that it's not actually in the use cases, we certainly need to add it. But I think fundamentally, what you presented is exactly what we're trying to achieve here.
So okay, perfect then.
A huge amount of alignment.
This is Eric speaking. I just wanted to echo Manu's feelings. Or sentiments. I see exactly what you're trying to do here. This is exactly where the issues that you're addressing was really the birth of what we had designed this whole criteria of the system on. So it's building that trust and relationship, being able to prove without a shadow of a doubt who issued a credential and who is the recipient of that credential, and to be able to move that credential freely in the ecosystem around and not have it lose its validation as well as its verification. So I think we're in lockstep with your thinking, and we actually have a demonstrative system that can show you that.
Yeah, actually, that's what we thought, all the group, when we came across the open badges idea. Actually, I was presenting about them in my keynote to the annual meeting in Washington, D.C. last April, because we really think that this is the technical grounds that we need underneath our, so to say, policy ideas. So it's great that we have found each other, because we are actually in lockstep. In the Groningen Declaration effort, we are not working on the technical level. We are more working on the policy level, creating the web of trust between institutions and countries. And I've always been saying that the technology underneath was something that was granted, that it was done somewhere. We will have to find the pieces, but I was absolutely sure that all the pieces, it was a given. It was around floating and on the net.
Great.
So,
this is Mary Bolt. This is Mary Bolt speaking. My question is probably to Dave Longley or to Mano. Please remind me if in our approach to use cases, we have intentionally taken a variety of points of view. And I say that because I think Victoriano has brought all the wonderful institutional pieces here. And my sense is that most of our use cases are really written from the individual user perspective. But have we used POV as a goal for any of our use cases to take an institutional desire, for example, and express it that way?
That is a good question. I don't think we've actually we've taken a very individualistic view. I think you're absolutely right, Mary. We've taken the individual viewpoint. We haven't really talked about institution to institution use cases, and so maybe that's a gap in the use cases that needs to be filled.
I think the processes that Victoriano has very, very elegantly presented to us are probably all reflected in our use cases, I think. But I'm just wondering about the perspective or literally the point of view, and maybe it does need to be articulated somehow. I'm not sure.
I think in the last iteration of use cases, we went in and we sort of tried to put in a prose example of what the use case could cover. And what we may want to do is offer maybe two different prose examples from two different points of view, because we do have roles and other various things in the use cases that are supposed to outline exactly what the use case covers. But it would probably be helpful to ensure that we're making clear that that multiple points of views can be covered by the use cases.
Okay. I think that's an excellent point, Dave. We had that section in there, the more prosy section, for exactly this purpose. But I don't think that we've actually done what Mary has said, which is put in the view, from the view of the institution. I mean, we could put in stuff from the view of a government. So there are a variety of organizations whose viewpoint we are not taking as the first person view, if that made sense. Any other questions for Victoriano? Before we move on? So Victoriano, one last comment on your, the technology's out there. I think the technology's out there in beta. A lot of this stuff is out there in beta, but we still need to finalize a lot of it, meaning that we need to come to some kind of world standard. You know, we need to come to consensus on what the technology should be, what the best practices are, and then actually take it through a standardization process at W3C. So we're still in the pre-standards mode right now. But everything that you said, I didn't hear anything that, you know, this group, at least from consensus basis, would disagree with. I think all of us want to see that what you outlined happen, and we're creating the technology to make sure that we can achieve that.
Yeah, it's clear that you do have what it's needed. So that's why I was so happy that we could connect our efforts. So it's great. So that's the main reason for sending you invitations, and it will be excellent that we can have a technology track in our next year's meeting and show that we can do these things. And, well, it will be great to have some showcasing or some demos that this can be done. So it's great.
Yeah, certainly. Okay, good. Okay, any other comments, Victoriano, before we move on to the next agenda item?
Well, just that we also agree that the individual individualistic view should be the main one. Although institution-to-institution flows will and should happen, having the individual in control of his own data, it's a very important thing.
Okay, great. All right, so next topic up is the digital signatures discussion. Dave Longley, would you mind taking over?
Sure. So you want to take over from the scribing?
Well, I mean, either way, I'm happy to continue scribing if you want to lead the discussion.
Well, I mean, it's fine either way. I was just going to reiterate what you have on the email here. Which is mostly about us trying to pin down the common areas between what Badge Alliance is trying to do and what we're trying to do here with the credentials work, and trying to find out if Badge Alliance is interested in primarily adopting the JSON-LD sort of stack instead of the Jose stack. We've been discussing. I know some emails have gone across that have said effectively that it doesn't seem like there would be too much pushback with going forward with the JSON-LD stack, but I know we wanted to discuss further, and I don't know if you want to go ahead, Manu, and cover pros and cons in the email, or where you wanted to go with this subject on the agenda.
Sure. Let's see. Okay. So if you could take a – go ahead, Barry or Sunny.
Oh, it's actually Sunny. I just wanted to chime in from the Badge Alliance's perspective. So I think David is right. Through some discussion on the Badge Alliance's side with Nate Otto and Chris McAvoy, I think generally there isn't too much pushback on our side. I think from our perspective, we're generally favorable to JSON-LD, a direction towards JSON-LD that aligns, since, you know, even our extension is now utilizing JSON-LD. However, on our side, we do want to do our due diligence. We have been, we have assigned credential feature as part of Open Badges. So we're just going to do our due diligence, find out how many folks within the Open Badges ecosystem are utilizing it, reach out to them, and kind of pick their brains about how the process has been and get some input from them. So generally favorable, but we're going to do our piece of the work and our due diligence. I think that's where we stand.
Okay, and I think that this whole discussion is going to take multiple weeks. I mean, it's not something that we're going to be able to wrap up pretty quickly, mainly because, you know, there's a lot at stake here. if we get it wrong, it's really bad news. The whole thing kind of falls apart, right? Because we don't have trustworthy digital credentials without a trustworthy digital signature scheme. And we don't have trustworthy digital credentials if the, you know, the mechanism that's set up is too difficult to implement, or for whatever reason developers find it hard to implement. So I think that's the basis of this conversation, is the understanding that it's going to take us weeks to get through this. It's going to take a number of back and forths on the mailing list and on this call to figure out all the pros and cons and whether or not it's worth it. So I think the biggest, just going to this email that was sent out here, I tried to kind of summarize where we were with the, and this is a very high-level overview of where we are. There's a very, you know, there's a very in-depth blog post that was done in 2013 about secure messaging versus the Jose stack and our concerns with it. Keep in mind that Jose is deployed. I think there are bits of it that are completely finalized, and I think there's still some bits that are being worked on. But in general, you know, large companies are using it between like organization to organization communication. The biggest problem that we had with it was that it was a fairly bad fit for the JSON-LD stuff, meaning that it's so generalized that it is actually fairly difficult to work with from a web developer's perspective, because basically once you do the digital signature in the Jose stack, all of your information becomes this unreadable blob of information. It's this big, gigantic chunk of unreadable, you know, technobabble, and so that was one of the first things that kind of triggered us to think about the problem a bit more deeply. The other thing that in general, that, you know, the Jose stack is nice in that it does allow you to do things like encryption and digital signatures on data. But the data that ends up being signed or encrypted ends up becoming this unreadable, you know, blob of information, and that's important to developers, because when you are developing any of these applications and you're seeing credentials flying back and forth, you want to be able to see that the right information is being sent right back and forth. So this is purely from a web developer perspective. So we believe that the JSON-LD secure messaging stack is easier for developers because it does what's called a clear text signature, right? You see all the information and then you see the digital signature at the end of the information, and it's human readable, right? Which means that it's easy for developers to work with. The Jose stack, on the other hand, basically encapsulates everything in this binary blob, and then you get the digital signature on that binary blob. Well, unfortunately, you can't see any of the information as it's going across, and you need special tools to decrypt the binary blob to even look at the basic information. So developer friendliness is one of the big pushes behind the JSON-LD approach. The other bit with JSON-LD is that there's an extensibility mechanism that's just built in from day one, meaning that JSON-LD was designed so that you would have a data format that is very extensible, meaning that you wouldn't have to coordinate through some kind of central organization to extend the fields that could go in there. So, for example, if you had a badge and you wanted to put homepage in there, you wouldn't have to go to some central organization that's controlling the master vocabulary for badges and lobby them to put in the component, the thing that you wanted to extend. You could merely just create a vocabulary that's basically designed for your market vertical. So if you're in healthcare, you could have a healthcare vocabulary. If you're, you know, in gene therapeutics, you could have a gene therapeutics vocabulary. If you're, you know, a university, or if you're, in the life sciences, each one of those organizations or verticals could create their own vocabulary and extend this base format in a way that is standardized, right? Meaning that the mechanism that you extend things is a standardized mechanism. That's what JSON-LD is about, or one of the things that JSON-LD is about. The JWS, the Jose stack, doesn't necessarily have that. Now, you could actually take JSON-LD and shove it into Jose. You could take a JSON-LD object and encrypt it into that binary blob, or convert it into that binary blob and then sign the binary blob. But the problem there is that, one, it's difficult for developers to look at the information, and two, if you ever wanted to recreate that digital signature, if you ever wanted to see if the signature checks out, you have to actually have the initial binary blob that was sent out. And so that's a problem. Let me explain why that's a problem. JSON-LD has this data model that's called RDF, and it's basically a way to express information. You can express this information in a variety of different formats. You don't have to use JSON-LD. You can use other syntaxes called NQuads or Turtle or JSON-LD or NTriples. There are all these different syntaxes that all map to the same data model, which is RDF. Right? When you use JSON-LD, you're basically using RDF. So there's this data model that's been worked on at the W3C for the last decade, or more than a decade, and is basically the data model for the web. It is a lot of really smart PhDs and scientists have gotten together and worked through all the issues and said this is the best way that we can model data on the web. It's extensible. There's an open world assumption, meaning that there's no single organization that's publishing data or saying what the data can contain. And that open world assumption is really important for the extensibility aspect of it. So all that's there in JSON-LD. Jose has taken a different approach. Jose has taken a fairly traditional IETF approach, Internet Engineering Task Force approach. And the IETF approach basically says there is one controller of the vocabulary, and that is the IETF. If you want to get additional, if you want to get additional things into this protocol, you need to go through a standardization process. You have to go through the IETF. Now, the nice thing is that there's really no barrier to entry at the IETF other than having to know how to go through the whole process. That can be fairly cumbersome. But the idea here is that you have to standardize if you want to extend the Jose stuff in any way, or if you want to extend the message of the protocol in any way. Whereas with the JSON-LD stuff, we're basically saying you don't have to do that. You can go through whatever your market vertical wants to go through. So if you have a smaller standards body you want to go through, that's fine. If you're just, a group of five or six companies that want to create a vocabulary to extend what can be expressed, that's fine, right? So that's kind of an open world assumption that JSON-LD uses. So in general, from a data model perspective, the JSON-LD approach is much more extensible. It supports more syntaxes. It's based on something that the W3C has been working on for over a decade. And that's why we think, it's all of those things combined that I think is the reason why JSON-LD is kind of doing so well, right? Many organizations are picking it up and using it for their data model because it's such a flexible, nice data model. So I'm going to kind of stop right there. Hopefully that wasn't a fire hose of information and everyone's eyes are glazed over at this point, but at least in general, does the data extensibility and the data model aspect of JSON-LD, does that make sense to people? Does anyone have any questions on why the JSON-LD thing is an important thing?
Well, this is Eric speaking. I've already expressed it in writing in response to your email, this was the key, I think, in developing a system that allows people to design credentials the way they feel best suits their needs and doesn't require to have a consensus every time you want to describe a credential. And I think that's the way things should be. People every use case may have a different method for how they want to describe information. For example, if you had a credential with defined as given name versus family name in a different credential, essentially that means the same thing, but in different countries, that's how it's described. And we should be able to handle that use case. And LD, to my experience, allows us to do that because you publish your context and how that happens. So that's another example would be, you know, where institution would be listed in a badge, perhaps, or a credential, where it was, well, what does that mean? Is that the name of the institution? Is that the URL of the institution? Is that the college within a university? What does that mean? So these are the things that when we set out to look at developing, you know, the structures, LD gave us that complete, that flexibility. So I think it's a critical piece. And therefore, if we need a signature system to be able to sign that, a digital security, we need to be able to have an easy way to implement that. And so the two sort of go hand in hand. That's my humble opinion.
This is Brian. Clearly, Manu and Eric and others will know that I'm strongly in favor of the JSON-LD approach as well. But playing devil's advocate, are there any potential security issues in giving people the freedom to describe whatever they want, in the sense that they could come up with something that, you know, maybe is easy to screw up or easy to get wrong? Has there been any discussion on that front? Like, what are the implications of letting people have arbitrarily extensive credentialing capabilities?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we have there are dangers at the actual protocol level, and there are dangers at the semantic level, right? So at the protocol level, let's go really, really down deep first. At the protocol level, the only real danger that we found is if people start publishing their JSON-LD contexts not via HTTPS but via HTTP, that's an attack vector, right? But that's a fairly easy one to detect. It's you know, if we load a JSON-LD context over HTTP, then we basically say nope, credential is invalid. We can't trust that this JSON-LD vocabulary actually came from the person that published it. There's a man-in-the-middle attack problem there, if that makes sense. So, for example, somebody could the best example we found of this is in the financial industry, right? So, if you model a transaction saying that you're sending money from one person to another, and in your JSON-LD context you say source means this and destination means that, right? If you serve that context over HTTP, someone could inject their own, right? It's not assigned anything. Anyone can do a man-in-the-middle attack against HTTP, and flip the source and destination. So instead of the funds flowing from you to the other person, the funds now flow from the other person to you. That would be an example of how, you know, the use of JSON-LD could actually flip the meaning of what you intended in the first place. Did that attack make sense? Did that?
Yeah, and I think having a larger example-driven write-up of both these kinds of things that we're talking about and how to protect against them, as well as non-strawman examples of these things. And if this exists, please point me to them. But I'd be willing to work with you on sort of like expanding the discussion, so it's not just in your head. And
yeah,
I think that would be a useful approach.
It would definitely. I mean, it's something that we'd probably end up putting into the spec at some point, right? I mean, only the way it would show up in the spec would be one sentence. You know, you shall not, you know, publish your JSON-LD context for credentials over a non-secure URL, right? You won't use a non-secure mechanism to express the JSON-LD context, because if you do that, your credential can be completely owned, right? So we definitely have to do that, and I think there's basically a security consideration section of the spec that we need, and that's where I think we'd kind of elaborate on that kind of stuff. What are the attacks? What are the mitigations? Things of that nature. So, yeah, we'd love to have your help on that. Go ahead, if you had another comment.
I'm Victoriano speaking. May I also suggest that we keep in mind that there are also very effective man-in-the-middle attacks for HTTPS as well. If the user trusts some certification authority, and then even some of the network appliances now do that in some universities. Ask also for things like DANE or key pinning and things like that, so that even if someone fiddles with the HTTPS certificates on the way from the use, from one end to the other, I think that we should also consider those attack vectors.
Yes,
did I explain myself?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, security is like an onion, right? Many layers to get the right level of security that you want. Those are certainly, again, I think those should definitely go in the security consideration section here. And we do have mitigations for those types of attacks. I mean, you can do digital signatures on the JSON-LD context. You can do, you know, multiple levels of digital signatures. So not only is the traffic secured, right now we have three potential layers that we can use. We can secure it via the HTTPS certificate, and if that fails, we can secure it via HTTP signatures, actually signing the HTTP headers in the contents of HTTP message. Digitally signing the HTTP headers, and one of the headers could be a SHA-SUM of the content that's being sent. And then the third layer that we have of protection is the actual JSON-LD signature itself. So all three of those signatures would have to be compromised in order to fake a credential. And that is way more security than is on 99.99% of the internet today, right? So we feel that we have a very strong security solution. We still need to go through, you know, the proper security review process for it to make sure that it can't be broken. But yeah, these are all very good questions or very good comments. I'm going to drop a link in the IRC channel to kind of demonstrate the difference. I know that all of this, to those that don't really deal with digital signatures that much, this can all feel very abstract and foreign. If you go to this link, this blog post, and search for, let me try... The header is called JSON Web Signatures versus Secure Messaging. It's about 60% of the way down the document. So if you go to the link that I put in IRC and you go about 60% of the way down, there'll be a header that says JSON Web Signatures versus Secure Messaging. And it'll have two examples of what the two different signatures look like. Right? So there's the one at the top, which is the Jose signature. And there's the one at the bottom, which is the JSON-LD signature. Do other people see that? Have people found that yet?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
That's the difference between these two mechanisms. That kind of summarizes the difference between those two mechanisms. So, for example, if you look at the bit above there, if you look at KID, do you see KID and it says 2010-12-2019? KID means key ID. This is the other problem that we have with Jose is that, you know, they use things like KID and TYP and ALG and a bunch of three-letter acronyms instead of just spelling things out clearly, and it's more cognitive load on the web developer to figure out what's going on. But that KID mechanism assumes that the key ID is known to the receiver. Right, Jose has this kind of the how you register keys is kind of out of band. Whereas with the JSON-LD digital signature stuff, if you look down at the bottom, you'll see a line called creator, and it says creator and then hbexample.org/monokeys5, right? The purpose of both of those fields in JSON Web Signatures and Secure Messaging is the same. It's to identify the key that was used to do the digital signature. The advantage with the Secure Messaging, JSON-LD Secure Messaging approach, is that we use URLs for all the keys. So you could actually go to that URL and fetch the public key and verify the graphs, verify the digital signature at that point. Right. So not only can you see all the information that was signed, you don't have to do any kind of decryption step or decoding step to figure out what information was signed, but the key itself is discoverable as well, right? So you could go get the public key, and just with that, you can verify to see whether or not this is a valid message or not, or at least the digital signature is valid or not. Right? Does that make sense to folks, the difference here? In the first system, there's no explanation of how you get the key. In the second system, there's a clear explanation of how you get the key.
Yeah, that's a compelling point.
Okay, so that's another kind of benefit to the secure messaging-based approach. I mean, the secure messaging-based approach turns the entire web into a public-private key store, or public key store, PKI. And that's important because it does it in a machine-readable way, so that when you get a message, you don't have to then go out and figure out how to get the key for the person that sent the message to you. It's just in the spec. You know exactly how to verify the message or verify the validity of that digital signature.
May I just say that I really like the idea? I was teaching PGP encryption to fresh students in journalism here a week ago, and actually I really love this idea of turning the whole web into a public key store.
Yep.
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
The only thing that we have to do it secure in a secure way, but once that's solved.
Yep, exactly right. Yeah. And I mean, so there's a mistake in this example at the bottom where we're publishing the key over HTTP instead of HTTPS. And that's bad. We shouldn't be doing that, right? So that's one example of how we'd want to publish the key. Key pinning, gain, there are many ways to kind of secure this information. And we have to be very careful about how we do it. But the general idea is you've got a clear text. You can see the data that's signed, and validating the data can easily be done in a machine, in a purely machine readable fashion. Right, you've got all the information that you need there to validate the signature, and that's just not true in the Jose case.
Just really quickly, technically speaking, you can get away with an HTTP URL in that case, because the data that's returned still needs to be followed to find out if the owner of the key has an assertion that indicates that they do in fact own that key. That URL will need to be an HTTPS URL. This URL that's right there doesn't necessarily have to be. It's an extreme technical detail, but just putting that out there.
Right. They could still man in the middle the key, right? They could inject something.
They could return something completely bogus.
They could prevent you from verifying the signature.
I guess
is my point.
Yes, that could happen.
Actually, this Victoriano speaking again. Actually, this idea of having things that can be machine readable and human palatable has been one of the main drivers behind all the work we have been doing in another technical group, the RS3G group that I talked about in the last talk, for university documents exchange. that you can you exchange something that a human can read, and then if you give that to sort of send it to a machine, the machine can also make sense of the document. So this idea is actually, I really like the concepts that we are presenting here.
The other thing to keep in mind here is that, you know, we're not going into this with no support, meaning that it's not just this group acting on its own saying that we want to do this. There are a number of other groups at W3C that are now starting to use JSON-LD as their primary data format. So this is a fairly new thing. I mean, JSON-LD is fairly new, so this is a new thing because of that. We've got, for example, the Linked Data Platform Working Group has adopted JSON-LD as a must requirement, meaning that you can use a variety of different RDF formats to publish information on the linked data platform, is a technical specification at W3C, but you must support JSON-LD. And because of that must requirement, there are a whole bunch of knock-on effects to that language and that spec, meaning that since they must support JSON-LD and they have to be able to prove that the data came from somewhere, they have to support digital signatures in the future, right? And the easiest way to do that is to reuse the JSON-LD digital signature mechanism, the secure messaging mechanism. It's not to use Jose, because it's kind of awkward to shove JSON-LD into Jose. But since JSON-LD has this native digital signature mechanism, they can just reuse it. And it works really nicely with the linked data platform, because this digital signature mechanism doesn't just work for JSON-LD. It works for all of the RDF syntaxes that W3C has created, all of the RDF standards that W3C has created is compatible with. So linked data platform, that working group is using JSON-LD and has a digital signatures requirement coming up. The social web working group, also an official working group at W3C, has just adopted JSON-LD as their primary data format, and they have to have a digital signature secure messaging mechanism. Right, so that's an absolute requirement there. And then the web annotations group. So this is the web annotations group. Is there a lot of ebook readers, and basically, if you go to a website and you see something wrong on the website and you want to highlight and say, hey, you misspelled this word, or this sentence is not true at all, you know, here's a reference to tell you what really happened. That's the web annotations work. It's a way of doing decentralized markup all over the web, so that anyone can annotate a web page and share those annotations with other people. They're now using JSON-LD as their primary data format. They absolutely need a digital signature mechanism. Each one of those groups, and this is what happened at W3C TPAC, each one of those groups in the hallway discussion that happened at W3C TPAC said they want to see this work happen. Right, so it's not just this group acting on its own. It's this group is going to be acting with those other groups. I have a feeling that the web payment stuff is going to end up using JSON-LD as well. It's way too early to tell, but we're making a pretty hard push for it. So there are going to be multiple groups that are supporting this work. It's not just us having to solve all of the problems and do all of the due diligence and write all of the specifications. Hopefully that made sense. Okay, so we're almost out of time. The thing that makes me nervous about it is I think we really need to have a couple of people from the Jose community make counter arguments to the proposal that we're making in order to make sure that we do proper due diligence on this. We need to find some real strong supporters of Jose and JWS, mostly people that have implemented it, to see what the why they picked it and why they, you know, to see if they have any counter arguments against the secure messaging JSON-LD stuff. So if anyone knows anyone that we can reach out to, that'd be great. I guess at this point, does anyone know of anyone that we could kind of pull into this discussion?
I do not.
Yeah, I mean, I know people that have used JWS and they really didn't like it. I'd show them the JSON LD stuff and they say, yeah, great. That I'd much rather use that than the JWS stuff. But what I think we really need is someone that's really sold on JWS and really knows it inside and out and has done a big deployment of it. So maybe somebody from Google or the OpenID folks or someone in there might be able to help. Because I don't think we can say that we've fully done our due diligence without having that debate.
Victoriano speaking here. I don't think it's a big deployment, but through one of the middleware activities around the European and global higher education identity networks, I have direct contact with a person who has implemented OpenID Connect. He has implemented the validator for OpenID Connect through some IETF and European Commission backed work. So I might ask this guy and ask if he's happy enough with Jose and the JWE, if you want.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Any leads that we can get into people like that would be great. And I know
okay.
we had one person chime in on the mailing list to say that they'd done a deployment, and they went through a couple of the reasons that they did the deployment in the way that they did. It wasn't necessarily a glowing recommendation for JWS, but maybe we can. I think his name was Mark Daly, but we should follow up with him as well on the mailing list.
Okay, this guy, the implementation of this guy is called something like an OpenID Connect reference implementation. Actually, most of the OpenID Connect developments are being tested against his implementation, even Microsoft.
Great. Actually, he would be a fantastic person to get involved in the group because the identity credentials login stuff. I mean, there's a chance here that we might want to, we might be creating a competitor to OpenID Connect through the identity credentials login work, and it would be really good to just talk with him to get his thoughts on what we're doing here.
I'll try to get him involved. That's quite a beefy guy, but I'll try.
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate it. Okay, I think that's the call for today. Anyone else have any other thoughts in general on the Jose JSON LD stack? Okay, and we'll go ahead and have more discussion on the mailing list and just circle back around to any points that are raised on the mailing list that need further discussion. We'll add them to the call, to future calls. That's it for the call today. Thank you, everyone, for joining, and we'll go ahead. What does everyone feel about a call next week? It's Thanksgiving week in the U.S. Would you rather cancel the call or postpone it for a week, or is everyone happy with a call next week as well?
I am not going to be able to attend the following week, so I'm fine with next week, but
okay.
It's just my...
Okay, well, we'll go ahead and put one out for next week, and... Sorry.
Is there either way for me?
Okay. Let's go ahead and try to have one for next week, because there is quite a bit of planning discussion that we have to do. That work stream discussion we still need to talk about and assign people to the work. So let's go ahead and have a call next week, and I'll send the agenda for that out later this week. Okay, thanks everyone. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll chat again next week. Bye.
Great
bye.
Job, everyone.
Bye.